PXG has done it again with the launch of a new lineup of drivers, fairways, hybrids, and irons. The new Gen 5 golf clubs deliver significantly increased MOI, faster ball speeds, longer distances, and tighter dispersions, all coupled with the exceptional feel and sound golfers have come to expect from PXG. Schedule your custom fitting or buy online at pxg.com.
And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast. On a Monday, I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Today's episode brought to you by About Golf Simulators. You see it glowing in the backdrop. Looks a little different today. I got the lights on, working on a couple things here in the studio. But another week as the PGA Tour finishes up on the West Coast and now makes its way over here to my state, the state of Florida, Ponte Vedra Beach. That's where I'm at. The boys will be up here in a couple weeks for the Players. But first, we'll be down at the Honda. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Ben Coley. He'll join me as we break down that field. More on that tomorrow. And after the Honda, of course, they go to Orlando. Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. Another difficult golf course. Maybe not quite as difficult as PGA National, but difficult nonetheless. And they come up to TPC Sawgrass, which is a good test, and then over to Tampa for Valspar at Copperhead. Four difficult tests here in Florida. Probably not going to see those 17, 18, 19 unders when you come over here. Sterner test when the boys get to the state of Florida. So should be fun. LIV kicks off their schedule this week down in Mayakoba. We'll pay attention to that as well. So professional golf in full swing. Got a great show for you. A friend of mine, a guy that I used to work with at Golf Channel, the host of Morning Drive, Gary Williams. He's going to join me here momentarily. We got a lot to talk about with Gary. And some irony as well with Bernhard Langer winning his 45th event on PGA Tour Champions. Got a funny story to tell you there. Talk about Jon Rahm. Gary can give great context, I think, with Players. I'm really curious to get his thoughts on what we're watching with Jon Rahm. Of course, we'll talk about Tiger Woods and a story or two from Arnold Palmer, who, of course, about Arnold Palmer, who was the co-founder of Golf Channel and Gary knew very well, and get a story or two about Arnie and obviously the tremendous impact that he had on the game of golf. I want to start today's podcast with a few instructional things that I was talking about on my Twitter at Travis Fulton, of course, Instagram at Travis Fulton Golf. It's been fun on Twitter. I've been putting a lot more instructional things out there and getting some good conversation in feedback. Of course, that's really my trade for the last 22 years. And I get I get excited following what the trends are, what the best players in the world are doing, why they're making changes, who they're working with, all of those things. It's interesting to me. And here we have Tiger, the host of the Genesis Invitational or Genesis Open, and he shows up, and I think for me, like so many others, I wasn't sure what to expect. You know, could Tiger even walk four rounds? Is he going to have a big limp? What's his ball speed going to be? What's his iron game going to look like? His short game, his putting? A lot of questions, right? What's Tiger going to look like? We saw him a little bit in December, but where is he now in February? And he comes out, he opens up with 69, shoots 74 on Friday, comes back, nice round, 67 on Saturday and 73 on Sunday. Gets through all four rounds, limp a little bit here and there. But for the most part, I was pretty impressed with his gait. I thought he looked pretty good. Now, his ball speed got up into the high 170s. I even think he hit 180 a couple times. And then it dropped pretty considerably on Sunday down to 166. So that's a bit concerning when you look at the drop off in ball speed. But all in all, I think Tiger probably has to look at it as a very solid week. I heard him talk about that he was able to hit really the golf ball very much the same way from his expectation standpoint than he was hitting it in his practice. So he was able to transfer that out into tournament play. There were some great drives, and particularly on Thursday, knocked a pass Rory a couple of times. His iron game showed signs. I thought his putter showed signs. A little bit of rust there, time to time, probably with the short game. But all in all, I think he has to be, you know, fairly pleased and encouraged by the way his body held up for 4 days. T45, not what he's looking for. He's there to win the tournament. And let's face it, he still has a long ways to go if he's going to win an elevated event or a major type of tournament. You know, the difference between shooting one under and John Rahm shooting 17 under or Patrick Cantlay shooting 14 under over four rounds, that's a huge gap. He's got a ways to go. But encourage. I think we're going to see him at Augusta. We know what he can do there. Can't count him out. I think there is that glimmer of hope still that Tiger can clip off his 83rd win. He talked about how he's using his swing more rotational now and less maybe some of the other way in the way that he's interacting with the ground. Tiger certainly not in the position where I think he can be shifting his weight aggressively into the lead side and really pushing up off the ground. This full extension in the left leg, the spine extending, this thrust of really pushing up off the ground. He talked about how he's a little bit more rotational. And that's probably a good thing, because when you are perhaps a little bit more rotational, I think in general, Tiger probably feels like he can cover it a little bit better. He's less likely to kind of push up and kind of back up, maybe in particularly with his driver. He's a little bit more on top of it. You can see the emphasis of the sternum, the torso, and even the head really swiveling and moving with the hips around to the left side. So it's more of this torque, rotational type of speed. And I'm sure that's very much the way that he's working on in the gym, and perhaps less of this vertical, right? And jumping and pushing up off of the ground. I think it'd be interesting is how much of the lateral is being trained in there as well. I would think the lateral very much is trying to be blend in with the rotational. And that's really what you have available to you. I mean, I can move side to side laterally. I can move up and down vertically, and then I can, you know, rotate. And I think when you look of those three, what he's doing in the gym and the muscles that he's strengthening in his core and the way that he's rotating and using his torso more around in conjunction with his hips, probably a little less differentiation between that upper and lower, where he would push up more and tend to back up. So kind of an interesting thing. I'm doing a little research on that a bit more specifically to see if we can get a little insight perhaps on even his training regimen and what that means from a rotational standpoint. But you could argue the fifth rendition of his swing, I mean, which is just fascinating. I mean, you look at when he came out with Butch Harmon and that swing, face a little shut at the top, just come down and just, I mean, explode, right? I mean, just up and off the ground and exploding. Could hit all of the shots, so dynamic, had some issues with the knee. Then he goes to Hank, and Hank, you know, rotates the shaft in the face a little bit more, make the effective loft of the face maybe a bit weaker to soften the position where he could kind of rotate more, let things kind of release more back around the left leg and not feel the need to have to push up, use the body to square it like he did in his younger days. That was a very different swing. Then he goes to Foley, which, you know, he goes stronger grip. Now the face a bit stronger, his hand path working more in and deeper around him. Probably attack angle that was a little bit on the steeper side. You know, just a very different swing than what he was doing with Hank. And then he comes back and Chris Como kind of gets him going back with more width, taller, more loaded into the trail side. I think Tiger probably with Sean was a little more centered, and now he's moving off the ball a little bit more. He's certainly taller. He's certainly wider, and he kind of gets that going. And now he comes back and it's got some of those pieces in it, but it's more rotational and less vertical. So a lot there. Fascinating. Interesting. I'm going to do a little more digging on that. We'll talk about John Rahm and Max Homa as well and their putting. I mean, those two guys, my goodness. The exhibition that we just watched with the flat stick with those two guys is insane. I mean, they made everything. And it wasn't like they were making putts first thing in the morning either on those POA greens. They're making them late in the day. I mean, my goodness, what a display. Now, Rahm with his iron game, positive 11.9 strokes gained with his irons. That was the greatest performance with his irons ever in a professional tournament. But in addition to that, he was positive 4.5 with his putter. And then you go to Max Homa, and Max Homa was positive insane amount, 11.3. That is just insane. That has to be the greatest putting performance of Max's career, I would think, as I scroll down, and it is. It's not even close. The next closest is positive 7.9 at API 2 years ago, which is next week. So these guys are making everything. And I made a post about Rahm's grip and wrists and forearms. And I just want to allude to that real quickly. So if for those watching on video, if I take my left wrist and let's just say I'm going to put it right here, like I'm going to put my index finger and my thumb up, like I'm kind of making a gun, right? And if I was to shoot the horizon, like that would be level. If I took my left wrist and kind of shot more down towards the ground, pointed the index finger more down to the ground, that would be, you know, uncocking the wrist or ulnar deviation. And then if I went up, right, and pointed up to the sky, shot the ceiling, that would be radial, right? Or cocking the wrist. Okay. Now in putting, what you see is because they grip it more towards the palm, right? In towards the palm, you'll see that left wrist kind of go a little more ulnar, kind of slightly uncocked. And then that right hand will come in and that lifeline of that right hand will sit kind of more on that knuckle. So it'll come in there and it'll sit more on that center knuckle of the left hand, right? That middle finger top knuckle, it'll kind of nestle right up underneath. It won't sit on top. It won't get on top. And I showed that picture of John Rahm's grip. And that's exactly where he was. And they do that and they kind of get that right hand more down and under. And they get that left wrist higher and more unhinged or ulnar so they can get their elbows and soften them and tuck them in towards the rib cage. Feel like their palms are more out versus the elbows pointing out and then the palms point down. And they do that very, very similar. I mean, there's a lot of similarities there. And their forearms match up to that putter shaft. So, you know, their posture looks a little different, but their grips have a ton of similarities. Their forearm alignments to the putter shaft have a ton of similarities. And from there, they just kind of engage the shoulders and the arms and the putter head makes its natural arc. And I think there's a lot to learn from that. Not every player has their right forearm, their trail forearm perfectly on that same plane. Sometimes you'll see the right forearm just a shade higher at times. But for the most part, you see some semblance of what I just talked about there. I think even on the telecast, they talked about how Rahm's hands were a bit higher. And you'll feel a bit higher, a bit more upright, like a Steve Stricker, when you take on that left wrist condition, that lead wrist condition. And then when you get that right hand sitting more down to the side, I see a lot of trail hands on top. I see a lot of that. And that right forearm gets too high. And then that putter head wants to go too far out going back. So talking about that grip, talking about forearm alignments, talking about those wrist angles, I got to tell you, I mean, you do that and then you just get adequately the right distance where you get a little hip hinge and your eyes are over to just inside it. Your weight maybe slightly left, and then you just start engaging those shoulders. I mean, it's pretty clean, folks. It's pretty darn clean. And I think, look, those two guys and the way they're playing and the way they're rolling the rock, I think there's a lot to learn. I really do from those two setups. I did an event here on Friday, and I made the statement that you know, it's interesting. I think I see perhaps more commonalities in putting, similarities in putting than I do the full swing when it comes to the best player. And the perception is that putting is the most individualistic part of the game, which, okay, there can be some truth to that. But when I study the best putters and the best players, I see a lot of similarities in the setup. I see a lot of similarities in the stroke, the subtle arc, minimal face rotation. I see a lot of similarities in how far back versus through. I see a lot of similarities in the shoulder staying pretty level. Like, there's just a lot of similarities. And then I look at the full swing. Yeah, there's some similarities, but I see more patterns, more options in the full swing. So it's always kind of interesting when you look at that. Before I bring Gary on, a couple thoughts on Keith Mitchell, who is playing some really good golf. We've been out in front with Keith Mitchell and his changes. If you follow us here on the podcast, he works with Parker McLaughlin as of late on his short game. And I had Parker on a couple weeks ago and we were talking about that. Keith Mitchell was positive 6.5 with his short game at the Genesis. And I'm just scrolling down here through Keith, and that's the best Keith Mitchell has ever had, his short game. So think about that. In the final group, you were watching John Rahm, who was having the best performance with his irons ever as a pro for him. Keith Mitchell was having the best around the green performance that he's ever had as a professional. And Max Homa was having the best putting performance that he's ever had as a professional. So Keith Mitchell, working with Parker McLaughlin, short game's getting better. He talked about it with Amanda on CBS, and I've had great conversations with Parker about that. I think it's really interesting. He hit some really good bunker shots. And when I was talking about the bunker technique with Parker, and Keith's pretty square, he said something that I think is worth noting here, that how Keith used to play the ball way forward and put a lot of weight forward, a lot. And then he would tend to maybe aim a little left and then tend to get pretty steep and kind of drag the handle with it, right? So the attack angle would get a little too up and down steep, wouldn't release it as cleanly and kind of drag the handle left with it. And it just wasn't real clean through the strike and using the bounce. And now when you look at Keith, the ball position, yeah, it's a little forward, but not excessively forward. And the weight's a little forward, but not excessively forward. I like that. I like ball position. Yeah, a little forward. Get it off the logo. Weight, little forward. Don't be crazy. Shaft, pretty neutral. And then from there, now you can see, okay, now the club head can pass cleaner. The club head can release. It feels like a little bit more down the line through impact rather than maybe dragging the handle left and then getting a little bit of that side swipe, a little bit of a hang on type of feel. You get away with that, hit some decent shots doing that, but you can see a little cleaner release. I think the divot and the way the club head's traveling through the sand, it's propelling out of there a little bit easier. And I'll tell you can see the confidence climbing with Keith Mitchell. You already know with Keith that you're going to get the driver. I mean, he is an excellent driver with golf ball. Excellent. I think his iron game is moving in the right direction. I think Keith needs some work with his putter. He's certainly not on the same level from a putting standpoint when you compare him to a Max Homa or a John Rahm, which might be a little unfair at this point as well as they're playing. But make no mistake, if Keith Mitchell can be in the upper third of short game on the PGA Tour and he can gain that confidence and then ride a hot putter from time to time, Keith Mitchell will be a factor on the PGA Tour. So it's cool to see him doing well. I reached out to Keith. I'd love to get him on the pod and talk about the changes that he's making. He's also, I believe, working with Decade on course management. So there's this sense with Keith Mitchell right now, I think, that he's taking on some information and learning and addressing some of the weaknesses that he might have. And certainly with the short game, it's working. And it certainly appears that it's working with the course management. As you look at them, the last three events or five events, I should say, 22nd at American Express, fourth at AT&T, 42nd at Waste Management, and fifth at Genesis. So good stuff. A few things there technically as we transition now. So bringing in one of my friends and former colleague from the Golf Channel, Gary Williams. Joining me now, Gary Williams, guy I learned a lot from in live television. Gary, I got to tell you, I think about those days back at Morning Drive a lot. I know they were early mornings and the schedule wasn't ideal, but by golly, I think about it and I miss those days, waking up, seeing you, seeing Damon, seeing Lauren, and putting on 2 to 4 hours of live television. Thank you for being back. You think about it ever?
I do. Travis, first of all, thank you for having me back. I think about it all the time. I mean, those were very important days in my life, in my career. And I don't think, you know, people, again, live television can be very tedious and it requires a certain amount of lead time because there's a lot of things that have to be threaded every single morning. And a lot of it is on the production side. And so naturally they fret about a lot of stuff. The first 18 months of Morning Drive, which started January 3rd of 2011, our morning meetings started at 4 a.m. without equivocation. There was no gray area. There was no, hey, some days we'll make it 4:30. No, 4 a.m. every morning. And I had already been doing mornings for 10 years, actually longer than that, 12 years, but it was on the radio side. So I could wake up. I always felt like I needed a shower, but I didn't have to present myself in any way.
Right.
So, but those days, look, you're with people who love something equally to the way that you do. So it's not like, well, he doesn't really want to be here because he's far more interested in the accounting department or in, you know, finance or in acquisitions. No, we all love golf and we sat there and we kicked stuff around every single day that we genuinely love to do. They're very memorable and some of the most rewarding days of my life.
Yeah. Just great energy. I think like you make good points. Everybody wanted to be there. And then of course, like the buzz of live television, there's just nothing like it. The adrenaline,
nothing like it.
The way that you are focused. I always tell my wife, I said, I've never been more focused on what I'm doing, you know, and listening, like listening with great detail and intent to what Gary's saying, to what Aaron's saying in my ear, to what I'm saying and to what the person's saying in front of me. Like there's just so much stuff going on. So the adrenaline is amazing. Now, of course, you've got a lot of good stuff going on. I listened to you on Sirius XM radio and the Five Clubs podcast, which is doing fantastic. So we've all moved on. Here I am with the Stripe Show podcast. There's so much happening in the world of golf these days, which is amazing. One of the things that's happening, I want to start with this. And this takes us back to Morning Drive as well. I would say probably 7 years ago, we were sitting on the set. And Bernhard Langer just won his, probably like his 22nd event or something, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And you asked me, you said, Travis, do you think Bernhard will catch Hale Irwin? And I sat there for a second and in about 3 seconds made up my mind that, yeah, I think he will catch him. I think he will get there. And you kind of looked at me really strange.
Yes.
And in that quick moment, I thought to myself, you know, I've got some experience with this. I was coaching Fred Funk. So I was out there a little bit. I knew Bernhard. I watched him in practice rounds and I watched him in tournaments. And I thought to myself in those 3 seconds, I was like, the guy's just different. I mean, he's just different. And I think he's that much better than everyone else. I genuinely believe that. Now, will he win another 22 times? I don't know, but I said yes. And by golly, yesterday he caught Hale Irwin with 45 wins on PGA Tour Champions. I want to start there with you because I think it deserves our respect. Bernie is different.
He is. And the reason I looked at you the way that I did is that I didn't think there was a snowball chance in hell that he would get to 45. I really didn't. And it had nothing to do with my understanding or lack thereof of the fact that he is different. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. his vigilance about his health, his you know, continual determination in the pursuit of his own process, which we're all in the human condition. And at some point, it has to ebb. It has to. And the other part of it is that I leaned in very strongly to one particular piece of empirical data. And that is what happens to those players when they turn 60. They don't win anymore. And it's not just like most of them. It's all of them. The top five winners all time on PGA Tour champions, excluding him, collectively, when they turn 60, won six times.
Wow.
He's now won 12 times since he turned 60. You know, again, there's a great line that I read recently. The line is, we don't rise to the occasion. We fall to the level of our training. He's the most trained, prepared player. And again, Hale deserves all the credit to you know, now share this title. But the other thing, Travis, about like that tour is that the guys who are joining the tour, yes, they're 50, but the difference between them and guys who join the PGA Tour, the guys who join the PGA Tour that are blessed with all the talent are also inexperienced. The guys who turn 50, like these guys who he has batted away for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they're the most experienced. And guess what? None of them are shying away from this challenge. Furyk, Els, Stricker, Kelly, now Justin Leonard. These guys
Arrington,
are like
going
in the water and going, yeah, you know, I may play 5, 6, 8 times a year. They're all in, and he's still doing it. I'm dumbstruck.
He shot 7 under. The final round to win by 3, and he beat Stricker, Harrington, Dickie Pride was there, Jerry Kelly, who you mentioned, and oh, by the way, Justin Leonard, who is now freshly out there as a young PGA Tour champion. It's just remarkable. No, it really is.
Like, that's the other thing about it. Like, Jim Furyk didn't showed up. He didn't show up with a kettle. He didn't show up with a pot belly. And you know. And again, go back to the guys who were turning 50 in the 80s and 90s. And I don't want anyone to think, well, you're disparaging the guys who won a lot then. I'm not. It's context. These guys who are turning 50 now were on the back end of the revolution of fitness and training that is now totally consumed the PGA Tour. These guys are and Patrick Harrington, like he's taken this like half-heartedly. No, he's completely all in on this.
Oh yeah. He's focused. I mean, he looks great. His golf swing probably looks better than it ever has. A lot of these guys, I mean, they look as good now as they did, if not better, 15, 20 years ago.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Bernhard is something else. I mean, what a gentleman as well. I can remember a quick story before we move on to John Rahm, who I want to get your thoughts on. Fred told me a story one time. They were traveling and he says, you know, he's never met a more prepared individual. I mean, this guy is so prepared for everything. And he said, we were all staying in the same hotel. And he goes, I don't know, it's probably 11 at night, 11:30, whatever. And the fire alarm goes off and it's going crazy. And he can hear people out in the hallway. And he says, so he gets up and he puts his, you know, his clothes on and he opens up the front door, and the first person he sees is Bernhard. And Bernhard's standing in the hallway and he's dressed in a suit with a briefcase. And Fred's like, where's everybody going? He goes, well, we need to get out. So they all go out and they're all standing outside. And Fred looks over at Bernhard. He goes, why are you dressed with a briefcase? He says, I'm always prepared. And by golly, he's standing there like he was already packed, ready to go. I mean, the guy's just, he's just different. He's looking ahead. What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? What am I going to do? And that's the way I think he just lives his life, not just what he does on the golf course. I mean, it's to the yard, half a yard when he's out there. And I've never seen anything like it at that age. As you said, guys don't win when they turn 60. This guy's won 12 times. And now he's tied with Hale at 45, playing still at a high level. And now here we have Tiger playing, who's tied with Sam Snead. on the PGA Tour at 82. We'll get to Tiger in a second, but we gotta talk about Rahm, because this is what I really want to ask. I'm really interested in your thoughts on what we're watching with John Rahm right now, Gary, because he's 28 years of age. Now he's got 10 PGA Tour wins to go with his 9 DP World Tour. We saw what he did at the US Open. He's got that under his belt. But you look at him here since the start of the year. He wins at Century, Kapalua. He wins at the Amex in the desert in Palm Springs. And now he wins the Genesis at Riviera. I mean, you want to talk about different types of golf, different golf courses. I mean, this guy, his game travels. It doesn't matter where he is, he can get it done. And he's winning different ways. I mean, you know, his driver hasn't been great at times, and he's won.
Yeah.
His iron game hasn't been great, although it was exceptional this week, and he's won. He's struggled with his putter here and there, and he's won. I mean, he's won with his B game, per se, as Tiger would always say. He's winning with different, in different ways. So I ask you this, at the age of 28, all of these wins, all of the success, number one player in the world now, give us some context here, Gary, like only you can, on what we're watching right now at John Rahm.
Well, I think what we're watching is this generation's, and I say this, and I understand that Rory does a little bit of globetrotting, not quite as much as John. John has done more in terms of, you know, he will not only satisfy that the fans in Spain, he'll go over and obviously, and Rory's done the same thing as far as the DP, you know, Tour Championship. I think he is, at this age, he is the most productive global player that we have seen probably since Ernie Els. Ernie, you know, was determined to be a global player at a time where, you know, not quite as many players were thinking as myopically as most of them think now about the PGA Tour. And if I'm from somewhere else in the world, I'm going to go and I'm going to play 2-3 times a year. I think John has shown there. I think 20 is the new 30 in terms of win totals. 30 is like 40 of the 70s and 80s because of the global depth. You know, he's won every season that he's been out there, but he only had one multi-win season before what he's accomplished already in this calendar year. I think what we're seeing is somebody who in 3 years could very well be on the cusp of 20. And you know, the other part of it is that if you look at, he just went over, he now has, 137 PGA Tour starts. More than half of them are top tens. 59 of 137. Wow. That's insanity. I mean, that's just, you know, you're venturing into a neighborhood that is not occupied by many people. And here's the other part. And here is the kicker to the production level. Unlike some other guys, and I think Koepka experienced this to some degree, not a prolific winner, but sensational in the biggest moments. Rory, DJ, Spieth, Thomas, not so much. None of like the awkward, clunky years of trying to find the balance between, okay, now I'm in a relationship. Now I've gone through these significant changes technically. How am I balancing social media, the adulation, learning how to say no? He's passed all of that at 28. He's got two small children. He has a sense of, hey, look, this is my priority, but I can still get lost in the pursuit of the perfection of the game while understanding that the most fun, the most joy is with the family. And I don't think it's lip service. And here's the final, I promise, the final thing. Like this guy like knows history. He's like dug in to who's done what and when. That to me matters. He's not aloof. He's not obtuse. He's like all in on all this stuff, which makes him lethal when it comes to when it's time to play. He doesn't take weeks off. I think he's a generational talent, and I think he's going to prove to be a generational player as far as accomplishment.
He doesn't take weeks off. That's a really good point. He's always there. Always there. That was the greatest performance with his irons as a pro. And it really wasn't even close. Positive 11.9 strokes gained approach. If he's elite with his iron game and now the rebound that we've seen with his putter, which went away there for a little bit, he struggled with some short game. He struggled with his putter. And now his putter is back and it's elite. And it's, I mean, what we saw with Rahm and Max Homa, my goodness. I mean, those guys on those greens, keep in mind late in the day, making these putts on these POA greens. I mean, they made everything. I don't know. Like I almost see any more now, Gary. I watch the PGA Tour and I just see the cream rising to the top in these big events. And the idea of a long shot winning one of these elevated events, I don't see it. I don't see it. These guys are, they've separated this group up top. When they're there and they're in the hunt and they just go up there, like I just don't see someone coming up and knocking these guys off the way that I maybe felt before. Where I felt like, gosh, you know, anybody can win any given week. And yeah, that's always kind of the case, but can they anymore with Rahm and Scheffler and Rory and even JT when he's, you know, he's kind of putting it together. Like, I don't know. I don't know if they can beat these guys.
It's a very good point because, you know, look, you can look historically and let's just look at the last 10 years, players who, you know, were outside the top 50 who won a really good event. And many of these events, you know, I could take Memorial for an example, and some guys who have won there that you go, wow, you know, that's really something. That's a great field, was a great field relative to what these fields are now. Right. There's no absentees. There may be one or two, but that's it. You know, on these weeks, and Bay Hill's going to see it in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks now. And doing the show last night on Sirius with Robert Dameron, who's, you know, that's his home, that's his club. Strongest field they've ever had is coming next week. And Rory, as you know, has done them a hell of a service over the last, you know, 5-6 years by, you know, patronizing the event, getting there before Mr. Palmer passed, having that kinship with him, being the face of the event. Now it's Murderer's Row. All of these designated events, there are no holes in the field. And so, you look, Nick Taylor was close. Nick Taylor is a multi-time winner. Keith Mitchell was in the last group yesterday. He's won an event. He's off to a good start this year. But the density of elite in these designated events makes the challenge for the player currently hovering around top 50 to top 100. It's like, if I pick off these two guys on the first page, I can do this. No, now there's seven.
Right. Yeah. Here comes Cantlay up there in the top five. I mean, Xander,
Morikawa blitzing at the end of the event. I mean, just look at the first two pages.
It's funny. We joke on Tuesdays because we break it down. The gambling show, I bring in the handicappers and this is what they do. And I'm like, do we even go past 35-1 in this? I mean, do we even waste our time? And like, we probably should talk and pick up. But honestly, that's the way I feel. Like, I don't see it happening. I just don't see these guys coming up. Not with these guys that we just talked about for the first 15 minutes. And what I've seen and the level of play, I see a gap. And I'm starting to think, anybody else going to win one of these with the ways that Scheffler and Rahm and Rory and these guys are starting to separate themselves? I think Morikawa is poised for a huge season. I love what he's done with his putter. You know, Cantlay's going to be solid. He's going to be there. Yep. Xander will put it together. I'm not quite ready to put a Will Zalatoris in that level yet, but he's certainly displaying the skill set with the way his putter's coming on.
Exactly. And I think that he's somebody, you know, over the next several weeks, because look, he had to put himself on ice because of his back, didn't play in the President's Cup, takes the fall off, shows it at the Tournament of Champions and has a solid week, an encouraging week. And then he shoots 64 on Sunday at Riviera. And I, You know, I'm with you. Like, it would be premature to put a guy who's won one time. However, he's unafraid of the deep end of the pool. We've seen it in countless major championships already. And they're going to your home state and a part of the calendar where shot making, shot value, resistance to par totally changes from the West Coast. Honda, API, particularly over the last couple of years, I was looking at you know, scoring averages of winners for the last 10 years at the next four events. And, you know, Honda's 8.9 under par. Bay Hills 12.3, and that includes two of the last 3 years, 5 under and 4 under winning the golf tournament. 12.7 at the Players, 11.3 at Valspar. It far more penal golf courses than they saw on the West Coast swing. And Will Zalatoris is a flat out flusher. And if he's going to jump up and win before the Masters, I think it's going to be in the next month.
Led the field in driving distance. Got to feel pretty good about that. 324 yards last week. I thought that was a really positive week for him coming back. Some sensitivity. I've been kind of really close to that on what's going on there with his back technically and what they're doing differently to protect it. I think it'll be interesting. Some wholesale changes that you would think might take Will a little time, or 64 on Sunday, no time at all. They're like you said, he's a flusher. Like he's gonna get the face on the ball and make it work. I think the speed that he was displaying at Riviera was the most impressive thing, which is a good segue into the speed that we saw from Tiger. Do you feel any different, Gary, about Tiger's chances moving forward, say in a couple, well, we're less than a couple months away from this tournament called the Masters that he's had some success at? We all wanted to see Tiger. What's he going to look like? What's the speed going to be in the driver? Can he walk for four rounds? A lot of questions. You feel any different coming out of the tournament from what you saw about maybe his chances moving forward on getting an 83rd win?
I don't. I don't want anyone to misinterpret, like, what he did that in the week that just concluded is wildly impressive and encouraging. But the fact is, it's like, as you just set it up, like, when is next? Is next 5-6 weeks from now? Is there a slim chance he turns up at the Players? Yeah, I'd say slim is hanging around the weight room. But I think the odds are long that he does that. And I have been, and I would love to be wrong, want to be wrong. This is not about like middle-aged hot takery. I don't think he's going to win again, because I just think it's such a tall ask. And I go back to, you know, the build to get to 80. Like when he won for the last time in 2013 at the Bridgestone, back at Firestone, it was a long 5 years till he won that tour championship. And then subsequently the next spring won the Masters. But the long build began at the beginning of 2018. Obviously long before the car accident. And I just wrote down, like, you look at his results starting in 2018, 12th at Honda, tied for second at Valspar, tied for fifth at the API, tied for 11th at the Players, tied for fourth at Quicken Loans, six at the Open, where he grabbed the lead on the 10th hole playing with Molinari, 64 on Sunday at Bellerive, pushing Brooks to the finish line. And then 3 weeks later, including a sixth at the BMW, where he shot 263 total before crossing the line at the Tour Championship. That's a long build. That's not attainable now. That's not even remotely achievable to even a modest degree. A micro strike of the degree that we're talking about would be so extraordinary, it would take a dozen screenwriters to write a script that could support the weight of that story.
Yeah, I think those are all valid points, because it is easy to see the ball speed in the upper 170s like it was on Friday. And I think he cracked 180 a couple times. and you see that ball chase out past Rory on 18. It was funny to watch Rory the next day reaching back. Or no, on Thursday, it chased past him on 18. And then Rory the next day was like, enough of this. And you could see him rev the engines up and was nuking it past everybody. I thought that was funny. But you see this 180 ball speed. You see the three birdies to finish. You see the spark in the iron game at times. You see the smooth putting stroke and Tiger looking like maybe he used to look. And it's just easy to think. And I fell victim because I've seen it before. And you're like, nah, there's no way he's going to win. This is, no, he's done. And then all of a sudden, Tiger proves everybody wrong. And I fell victim. And I sent a tweet out and I said, Tiger's going to win again, isn't he? I mean, it's just, that's just generally the way I felt. Now, you pull that up and this runway up to his win at the Players, those are a lot of good points. And the other point goes back to these events that I'm just talking about with these elevated events and all of this talent in there. He's not anywhere near John Rahm right now. He's not anywhere near Scottie Scheffler right now, over 4 days to win an event like that. Or Max Homa. That's right.
I mean, you know, again, and I'm not what he did to make the cut. And you can say, well, you know, kind of got a little help. Sure. I mean, guys get help all the time late on a Friday and the line moves, then turned around and shot 67 on Saturday. It's insane stuff that he had the speed, put the four rounds together. Look, you can take a healthy person and say, you're not going to play competitive golf on the best tour in the world for 7 months. You know, he misses the cut at the Open. We don't see him again. And you know, a healthy person would have a hard time just going out there with just competitive rust and making a cut. And he's got all the other ancillary things physically that he's got to deal with. Here's the other part about, like, you go back to 19 when he won the Masters, and even that short ramp run up to that, he had won the prior, you know, he had won an 18 at the end of the summer at the Tour Championship. And then he had five starts to start the season in 19. Five. He had five. Tied for 20th, tied for 15th, tied for 10th, a 30th. And then he tied for fifth at the match play, makes a run, and including clipping and eliminating Rory McIlroy. You think that didn't fortify his mind? His next start was at Augusta. Like, he put a seed in that guy's head. And I just fortified my own belief that guy, if he's there, I'm better than that guy. Whether, you know, again, it's an 18 hole funky little format, but still, all those things he took to Augusta. And oh, by the way, look, and Tony Finau was not the player. Tony Finau was in his group.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the player that he currently is today. And Koepka is not the player he was when he was in the mix right then. I think Cantley's better. And he touched the lead on that Sunday. My point is, like, 4 years later is a lifetime in golf. Scheffler was just becoming a professional golfer.
Yeah.
Rahm was not who he is now. I think Rory is more complete now. Homa was in the hinterlands. He was actually going to win for the first time a month later at Wells Fargo. This is a lot of stuff to ask of somebody.
Yeah. No, it's good. I think it's stacked up against him. It feels like
big time,
more than it ever has been. Ever. All right, let's finish with this. The tour is coming to Florida. Some tournaments that we know a lot about historically. They're down at the Honda this week, and then they come up to API at Bay Hill, and then it's the Players, and then Valspar. Spent a lot of time in Orlando. You had a terrific relationship with Arnold Palmer, who was one of the co-founders of the Golf Channel. You interviewed him perhaps more than anybody. You spent a lot of time with him. Do you have a story for us for Arnie? One of our favorite weeks coming up in here in a week's time.
Yeah, you know, Travis, I have lucky enough to have, you know, a handful of personal, you know, moments with him. The first time I went over there, I'd met him in a flyby passing in the locker room at Seminole of all places in the winter of 1995. He was down there at play golf. And, you know, that was my only other time of shaking his hand. And then when I got to Golf Channel to start 2011, I was about 6 weeks into the job. My wife and kids were still living in New Jersey at the time. So I'm living alone, doing morning drive, getting up in the middle of the night, basically. And Matt Hegarty, who is, you know, still, you know, he's one of the most important figures there on the production side, senior coordinating producer at Golf Channel. He says to me, "Hey, the USGA is having this event over at Bay Hill. It's a members event. And wanted to know if you would like to host this fireside chat with Mr. Palmer." And instead of immediately saying, "Are you kidding?" Of course, you know what the first thought came to my mind? When am I going to get out of there? Because I have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I really was like fretting about, oh my God, like I really have been going to bed at like 8 o'clock every night, trying to get acclimated to even one less hour of sleep after doing, you know, radio for 12 years and getting up at 4. Now it's getting up at 3. So anyway, I'm like, yeah, yeah. So I go over to Bay Hill and I sit at the head table, and they were celebrating that he was one of only a handful of people that had won 3 different USGA championships, the US Amateur, the US Open, the US Senior Open. And I'm sitting at the table with him and Kit, his wife, Dal Finsterwald, who was his dear friend for probably 60 years, maybe longer, and his wife. And, you know, we have a little bit of small talk, but you know, you're there, it's a table of 10, and he was on the other side of the table, and his hearing was not great at that time. He was, he was 82 at that time. He had turned 82 the prior September. So anyway, so as we get up to walk up to this little stage and these two leather back chairs, he looks at me, shakes my hand again, and he goes, "Are you feeling okay?" And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I'm feeling fine." He goes, "Just remember, they're not here to listen to you." And I was like, that is a great shot. And it was exactly what I needed. Like, he's like, "Hey, man, it's just me and you. And I'm going to needle you, and I'm going to take a shot at you, and you and I don't know each other. And I think that you can deal with, you know, I'm not trying to debilitate you." And at that moment, and by the way, here's a little backstory just to add some context and color to that. My father, right after I had gotten a Golf Channel, was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and he was gone 6 months later. The president of Golf Channel, Mike McCarley, told him before I went over there, "Hey, you know, Gary Williams is doing morning drive. You know, his dad's sick." So, and from that moment on, he made a point of reaching out, looking out. And so it was the first of what would become a relationship that I cherish to this day that only sadly lasted, you know, a little bit over 5 years, because he was gone in the fall of 2016. But I remember bringing my daughter over there to have breakfast at Bay Hill on a Sunday morning with him. And I tell you, here's the thing that is amazing to me. There will never be another iconic tournament host who rides around the tournament to watch golf shots with his own golf clubs on the back of the golf club.
It's always,
I mean, seriously, Travis, so come on.
Boy, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh man. And you always waited for him to like pull right up next to the green, you know, yeah. as the leaders are coming through on a Sunday, and what Darnold doing? He pulled up right next to the green. Just let him go. Just let him be there. Like, he's going to throw a ball down and chip a couple. Let me show you something.
He is, you know, I did it was the last interview that they did for television together. I know Nance did one with them at the Insperity for an internal audience, Palmer player, Nicholas Trevino, and player, he was like, you know, the four of us are sitting at this table at the Greenbrier in the fall of 2015. And he said, "Those two loved it more than I did. And he did." And he was pointing to Trevino and player that they would die lousy to play 36 a day for the balance of their lives. And it's not like Jack and Gary didn't love it, but not like those two.
Oh, wow.
They're junkies, just flat out lifetime junkies.
Yeah. Wow. It's I still say to this day, there's been a lot of moments in golf. You remember the shot, you know, in Tiger, US Open on one leg and all those things. But I'll tell you, when Arnie hit that driver off the deck on 18 with Sam.
Yeah.
And he rolled it up to the front. That's top three for me. That's top three. That was cool. That shot was cool. He's like, give me the driver. I mean, the fact that he just pulled the driver out is just insane to start with. Like, you know, and then he pulls it off and hits it onto the front of the green. It's a goosebump moment, top three for me.
It's awesome. And the fact that, as you mentioned, that Sam Saunders was caddying for him. You know, the other part about it is that he was an older gentleman at that time. Yeah. And the other part that always gets me about that shot, like hitting driver off the deck, and I'm older than you, you know, was kind of a cool thing when, you know, maybe it was the burner, or even go back to, I had a Palmer Peerless driver. Like these drivers now.
Not made like, for that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, the head of the driver, how flat the face looks, the bulge on it, like all of it. It's like, how did he not either cold top that or chunk the hell out of it that he was able to kind of, he center faced it and just hit a little low missile.
Perfect.
Perfect.
I remember when he took it. Oh no. Like, no, you know, like it could have been so bad.
So bad.
Like, top it, heal it. I mean, the ball wants to go into the, no, don't do this. And then wow, he hit that pretty good. Wait a minute. great moment. I could talk about this stuff all day. Great stuff. Gary, I can't thank you enough. Five Clubs podcast, SiriusXM. Love catching up with you on Talking Golf, man.
Listen, it's good to see your face. I hope sooner than later I get to actually see you and appreciate all the stuff you do. You're so committed to not only your instruction, but all the other ancillary things that you're doing. I mean, talking about golf and the wagering element, which has become so big. And I say this without, you know, I'm not trying to patronize you. I'm awfully proud of you. You know, that set you've got, the setup you've got behind you, that's commitment, man. I mean, you're pouring it all in, which I appreciate the hell out of.
Thank you. I appreciate that.